As a reminder, super speed. I don't have it. I'm Eddie Webb. And today we're going to talk about Crisis on Earth X here on Genreless. Hello, welcome to our graceful exit from the Arrowverse as we wrap things up with a crossover miniseries, Crisis on Earth X. And I have to tell you, I almost went with even more non-sequitur quote of, "You're out of milk." But I didn't. I went with this one because it was the only line that made me actually laugh out loud during this whole thing. Yes. I think it's fair. This is actually, I think it's a good choice for a couple of reasons. I feel like this is when the crossover format for the Arrowverse is really locked in. They know what they're doing. They do it well. And it's very much structured like a miniseries. So like in some markets, it was even just positioned as a miniseries. So you watch the four episodes in isolation. The fact that they're shoved into other shows is just kind of an afterthought. But it's not as dense and complicated as like Crisis on Infinite Earths, which I think is a six-parter and requires a much deeper knowledge of not only all the shows going on, but also just DC in general. This is a pretty good middle place to kind of talk for, because this is honestly, I don't want to say unique because I'm sure there's an example I'm not thinking of, but it's pretty rare to have this exact style of crossover in television. Honestly, we talked about this last week, but there are bits of it that kind of feel a bit Silver Age even, you know, or Bronze Age at least. It's punching Nazis from a parallel universe is a classic comic book kind of trope. Indeed. The way this show put it together aired on the side of comic book as opposed to real world Nazism, and sometimes that led to some awkward moments, which, well, I'm sure we'll talk about, but in terms of just a collection of shows that really knows what it's doing, after the last few shows, I'll be honest, this felt like a breath of fresh air. I mean, it reminded me why near the end I was like, why are we doing the Arrowverse still? I'm getting kind of tired of this. But this was like, oh no, I remember why I loved these shows is because of this kind of stuff. No, listen to our previous episodes. That's all I'm going to say. We'll come across them as we get to them, but I did not do research on The Ray because I didn't know who that was. And like half of the season 6 Arrowcast, I don't even know who they are except for Mad Dog, who's, I just know he's terrible. I do know Mr. Terrific. I do not recognize this version of Mr. Terrific because this is the worst. The actor's certainly trying, but Mr. Terrific deserves better. No, I cannot. I 100% believe that. Just much as the up, up, and away joke happens. I mean, it's cheesy. This is what it comes down to. It's cheesy. At sometimes it's a little annoying, but it's not. This is when the Arrowverse generally has its heart in the right place. I feel like it's certainly trying, and it is trying to emulate everything about these comics that are great. And what's interesting about these crossovers and this crossover in particular, before we dive in, because we have four episodes covered, so we have to dive in pretty quick. But this feels like a classic comic book crossover, but when you actually look at the structure, it's not. It's much closer to an event comic like, say, Civil War or the actual Crisis on Infinite Earths, or actually any of the DC Crisis things, where it's a separate comic book line that happens to contain a lot of other comic events. And sometimes the individual comics will feed into that event and then repercussions will feedback out of the event, but it's its own separate thing. So the fact that it's actually stitched into the shows is kind of a weird moment, especially because it's episode 8 of all of these shows. So it's like just randomly, you know, 7 weeks in, oh, by the way, we're doing this thing now. which does feel very comic book. Hey, whatever storylines you have, stop those for a moment, do this thing, and then we're going to go back to your storylines. That's very comic book. Yeah, but I mean, but also, like, it had its own intro and outro for each of those episodes. If you watch them back to back like this, it just feels like you're watching a different show. It felt more like the Defenders show we watched way back in the Netflix era than anything else. But with a lot more heart and fun. So yeah, I mean, like, it hit all the right notes while still being its own separate beast. It's just this really cool, distinctive bit of television that I don't think we're ever going to see again anytime soon. No, honestly, for Marvel, the Avengers and then in future, the Thunderbolt movies are going to be those forms of it. But like the Captain America Civil War movie was also kind of a version of this, but in that case, it was to the detriment of Captain America because like it wasn't really a Captain America movie. Captain America was just the head of, was basically the crossover movie. This is distinctive because it doesn't imply anyone is supposed to be in front of it. Like, yes, there's a Supergirl episode. Supergirl's not any more in it than anyone else. But nobody has that. No one's getting preferential treatment. It's just four creative teams basically jammed their teams and budget together and made a kind of a jam show of four episodes before going back to their jobs. You could see that everyone from the crew to the cast on screen to the production people all seem to be just having a blast making the show. We saw a tease of this in one of our things, but prior to this, each show did have a little kind of bumper that led into Crisis on Earth X. But all that stuff gets recapped, so we're not going to necessarily go into that. So we're just going to dive into part one, Supergirl, season 3, episode 8, unless you have something you want to cover before we go in. Okay. So, first one. A Nazi regime rules the parallel world of Earth-X, where an archer known as the Dark Arrow is the Führer and leader of a cabal known as the New Reichsman. He seizes a temporal gateway from the Freedom Fighters, which enables travel to other universes. On Earth-1, Barry Allen and Iris West's friends, including Kara Danvers and Alex Danvers from Earth-38, come to Central City for Barry and Iris' wedding. Harry Wells, Cisco Ramon, and Caitlin Snow develop a serum to separate the Firestorm Matrix from Martin Steen and Jefferson Jackson. However, Jefferson is reluctant to give up being Firestorm, while Steen is thrilled the prospect of being able to live a normal life with his family. Oliver Queen reproposes to Felicity Smoke, but she is hesitant about marrying him. The wedding ceremony is interrupted by invaders from Earth-X, led by Dark Arrow, his Kryptonian wife Overgirl, and the Earth-X analog of Prometheus. After Kara injures Overgirl and Alex and Sarah Lance capture Prometheus, the Nazis retreat. Dark Arrow and Overgirl, who are doppelgangers of Oliver and Kara respectively, discuss their next step with Thawne, Barry's speedster nemesis who was previously presumed dead. And this is just jammed full of tropes. They're evil Nazis. They're in a parallel universe where the Nazis won World War II. There's a superhero wedding, which of course gets interrupted by supervillains. Everyone who is on the opposite team is of course an evil doppelganger version of a hero. People that we thought dead are actually still alive. There's only one trope that box doesn't get checked, and we will get to that in episode 3. So, but everything else, day one, checked off. Yes. Right. Oh, is that who that was? Okay. I mean, I did see I think it was this episode where they had the comment of, like, how many times have you killed me, Barry? So, like, Thawne kind of referencing the fact he hasn't really been dead. I mean, it's just every cliche. But again, it's done with so much, I keep saying heart, but it really is. This is just what you're here for, and we're going to present it. We're not even going to apologize for it. Right. Recently, I was talking with someone, and we were trying to define the word camp. And the best definition we kind of landed on is heightened seriousness. It's not parody, but it is a serious take on something, but it is extremely elevated to the point where it could tip over into humor and parody. And I feel like this is camp, right? It's the sense of course there's going to be a wedding. Of course you're going to casually jump universes to go to your friend's wedding. Of course, when Felicity says she doesn't want to get married, it's going to be said the most awkward time during the rehearsal dinner. You know, it's like there's almost no surprises in this. But that's not what you're watching, at least this episode for. There will be twists later on, but this episode is just here to set up everything and get you on board with it. And so it just needs to go as hard as possible. So we start off with the color saturated Earth X, where everything is red and black, and it's night because it's always night because it's Earth X and it's evil. And the Dark Arrow, they all have masks, which are there because they make them look evil, but also so that way the actors can actually have stunt people so they're both on screen together. But they're also, they have red around the eyes, and they have SS on their chest because that's what you do when you're Nazis. And Oliver Queen is the Fuhrer. Right. I mean, maybe. Yeah. What's really amazing about this episode, though, is that it does give you just enough to follow along, right? Like, you would think this would be deep, deep, deep mythology. And like, okay, you have to understand the storylines of like two dozen characters to get along with this. But they do a reasonably good job of quietly recapping everyone's arc. It's usually in dialogue. But like, you know, each hero gets a power moment throughout the episode, especially during the wedding fight. Everyone during the as everyone's gathering for the wedding, they have conversations that allow them to recap all of their personalities and also their key relationships with each other. So, I mean, it's actually really solid writing. Again, nothing unusual happens. Like, yes, there's the quote unquote mystery of who the people from Earth X are, but within 5 seconds, like, okay, they're obviously evil versions of the heroes we know. To the point where like you see boots hanging and a cape hanging off camera during this early scene, and it's like, okay, it's obviously Supergirl, come on. So I mean, it's not a surprise, but if for some reason you said, you know what, I haven't watched Arrowverse, I want to start with a 4-episode crossover, that would be a good place to start. You're actually not nearly as lost as you think you would be. Yeah, absolutely. We hear about the Freedom Fighters, which, again, if you've read any comic books, you go, obviously these are the supervillains who are now mysteriously heroes, because that's how these parallel universes always work. But we don't see any of that yet. We just know it's a bunch of people who are fighting against the Nazis. They have a temporal gateway, which the Nazis then acquire so they can conquer other Earths, because that was a choice that was made. but it was neat to kind of, I mean, it gives an opportunity to bring in some minor characters. It's like, oh yeah, the Shield. I remember that. And it was a neat little kind of warm up fight for the bigger fight we see down the road. But of course, it was like, again, it's the, of course, Ollie jumps on top of a car and starts shooting people with arrows, because that's just what you do every season of Arrow. You're going to jump, Oliver Queen's going to jump on a car and shoot people with arrows. Right, exactly. So the wedding. There is a fun moment where Supergirl and her sister talk about whether they're going to go to the wedding. And at no point is it the, let's talk about the repercussions traveling to the universe or the consequences of it. No, it's straight up just, man, I'm just not feeling it. And I sympathize with Kara on the front. There's been times where it's like, I should go because everyone expects me to be there, but I don't want to get off the couch right now. And I just want to deal with people. And I was just like, man, I sympathize with that way too hard. I think Cisco made it and gave it to them. I think Cisco made it for them. Yeah. 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 It's like the car keys. Boop, boop. Yep. And that's a moment where the casual inclusiveness of the CW adds an interesting additive effect, right? Because the CW formula at this stage is basically, and we talked about this before, there's one or two people of color, there's one queer person, they may have one queer relationship, but each show has one or two of those, and that's it. But when you shove them all together, you start to get some interesting ad effects. In this case, you have the fact that we have two women who are queer on some level, potentially can run into each other and develop a relationship between these shows. And that kind of just casually showing that there's more than just the token queer relationship in a show makes it feel much more lived in and weirdly real than in this extremely unreal scenario. Because you're right, it's the, oh, it's a crossover show and Alex is broken up right now. So yeah, she might run into, of course, it's the other, you know, lesbian, but I mean, it's on one level, it's like, eh. But I mean, the thing is that it shows that there's different permutations and that they can exist and interact with each other. I also love the fact that it's just a one-night stand. And it's the, you go to a wedding and you make out with someone you think is attractive and you maybe make some bad decisions. And it's like, yes. And it's presented completely straight. And the fact that it is a gay relationship is completely irrelevant to the more interesting human story that happens there. And it just reinforces that White Canary is the best Jack Harkness. Right, and what's great about it is that because in each of their respective shows, they are a lead. There's not a one person's being diminished to illustrate a particular relationship. Like so often in these relationships, it's the running trope of the girlfriend dies. Right, it's the if you're in a two women in a relationship, a romantic relationship, one of them is going to die because that's very much an ongoing trope in queer media. Or not, I'm sorry, non-queer media that see that. But because they're both leads, that's not going to happen. So it's the, okay, now there's just, and neither one's going to be like on the bad side of the relationship. Neither one's going to be a problem. So it's just two people we both like, just kind of not being on the same page. And so it makes it much more interesting to follow than so many other ways these relationships have been presented. And like, on the one hand, yes, it sucks that all the women are ultimately talking about men. And it's like, and to be fair, that is an ongoing problem with this whole crossover is that most of the time, with Sarah being one of the few exceptions, if there are two women in the scene, they're probably talking about their feelings about a man. And that's a very much an ongoing thread through all of this. But A, these are a bride and her bridesmaids before weddings. That's going to be a natural topic of conversation. B, many of them are in romantic problems because they're CW shows, so it's a chance to recap all of those dynamics. And C, it is, like you said, balanced with Kara just being so excited to be part of this because she's a chance to do this and forgetting that maybe she shouldn't be getting her nails done when you're a Kryptonian. Right, and I mean, and also like, it happens with Kara too. It's like, you know, just having casual conversations while they're having superhero fights. But again, it's a very economical way of showing what these characters can do for people who may not be familiar with it. While also, to your point, kind of poking fun at last year's crossover, where Kara's like, these guys are still around. Oh God, they're so last year because they were literally last year's crossover villain. And I'm like, I see what you did there, Kara. And you know what? That's fine. You could do that. You're amazing. And in a funny way, I mean, because this is the Supergirl episode, we talked before about like season one. It's like, you know, it was okay. We kind of liked it. I maybe watched more. But at this point, it's like, I should go back and watch Supergirl because I was like, I'm really into this much more confident Kara, right? I feel like she's done better in this crossover than she was done in her own show in season one. So maybe it's just this crossover where she gets a really nice meaty role. All right. But I think what this crossover is doing, and again, when we get to the Caitlin Sisko Wells dynamic, and how they're developing a serum to separate the Firestorm Matrix, by continuing these little kind of crossover moments, it's giving you a chance to see the best parts of each of these shows. It's like, yes, you're seeing the fantastic scientific support team for the Flash show, and they're helping out with the really cool scientific team from the Legends show, and they're focusing on a science problem. and it's a low-stakes science problem, but it shows you, look at all these people who could do science so hard. They're so good. They're so sciencey. No. I'll get to that. We'll get there. We'll get to the Voltron joke, if I remember, which I probably won't. But it shows that on the one hand, it also is just walking up the line making fun of its own formula, because it's like, let's put all of the love interests together. Let's put all of the science people together. It's like, look, we have the exact same archetypes in every single CW show. Now we're putting them all in the same space. Isn't that fun? But also it shows that there actually is a pretty diverse set of characters in those spaces, because Stein is much different from Wells, even though they're both the older science mentor. Jefferson and Sisko are very different, even though they're the, person of color science sidekick. We're seeing, okay, these actually have personalities and they all kind of like each other, which is another neat touch of like, they're not sniping or antagonistic. It's the, oh, look, this is the time we get together once a year and we have wacky adventures. And it's like, yeah, I like these people. That's right. I do remember these people. They are cool. And I love hanging out with them. Honestly, it's funny, like the wedding scene, we talked about before. I don't think either of us is like super invested in Barry and Iris's relationship. So the fact they're actually getting married is meh. It is just the setting for the stuff that I care about. And so like, there's lots of little moments of like the wedding party and who's doing what. Like, frankly, the best line leading up to it is the guy coming in and it's like, are you with the bride or the groom? It's like, well, I've tried to kill both of them. So I'm like, okay, that's fair. Rory is basically, and to be fair, Rory is just the comic relief for this whole crossover. I don't think that's bad, but he's not going to have a large role. And there's one part where that's bad, I'll get to later, but Rory just kind of bringing his A game in terms of just the one-liners, and that was a great one. But the wedding is really just a setup for a whole bunch of heroes getting to punch things. And we get that. Yes. Which just reinforces that Rory is fantastic at being unrepentantly a criminal, even though he's not actually a criminal at all. And it just brings he is a fantastic addition to not only Legends, but this whole cast by just being that viewpoint of like, look at how ridiculous this is. Look at how uncomfortable this is. It is in the same place that Optimus Prime's trailer goes. Which is, we don't talk about his face. There is a subplot of Stein wants to live with his wife and daughter. And so he wants to stop being Firestorm. Jefferson doesn't want to stop being Firestorm. I'm not a fan of this plot. I will say I'm a fan of where it ends up. But at this stage, it really comes across like Jefferson's just being kind of whiny. Not helped by the fact that Stein's like, well, I figured out a formula that you'll have superpowers, but they'll be stupid superpowers. And it's like, come on. Yes. I mean, okay, we got a great Spider-Man joke in there, I guess. But I use great in the worst possible sense. And also, it's a little too far. It was just like, this is supposed to be actually a pretty serious moment and you bring a joke into it. So it's like, maybe a bit overplayed here. But in the other side, the Felicity being awkward gag does plan better for me. Felicity being flustered and accidentally being told, let's say, I don't want to marry you. Because Felicity has pretty consistently been really awkward socially and flustered by her relationship with Oliver. So that actually builds off of stuff we established earlier, whereas Stein constantly oscillates between being very socially aware and being completely socially oblivious. So I chalk up the bad writing. But Felicity's always been kind of like just not sure what to do with Oliver. And so that actually, I think, played well. Both Ollie doesn't know what to do with Ollie. Yes. Right. Yeah, no, that I think that's why I'm frustrated by this episode specifically, because you've seen that these characters have grown well together. Like there's an actual chemistry with these two actors, and they're actually a really good team. And so the fact that this is handled a little awkwardly is a bit frustrating, but it goes, like I said, it goes good places, I think. I'm poking in this episode because I feel like it gets better from here. Okay. All right. I can possibly see that. More importantly, however, I do want to point out, the minister who gets vaporized is played by William Catt. And for those who don't know, William Catt is the actor who played the lead in the amazing show, The Greatest American Hero. No. Google it if you want to hear the song. But we talked before about how The Flash specifically, but really the Arrowverse in general, loves to cram in little cameos and casting choices as not quite gags, but loving homages. And this is definitely another one of those. It's like now we're homaging other just classic isn't old, superhero live action shows. I think Lou Ferrigno was a guest star on one of these shows too at one point. I feel like I remember that happening. But anyway, so Nazis show up, Nazis fight, Nazis retreat. It's basically most of the rest of this episode. Right. Yeah, I mean, I was being facetious to get that reaction interview. So well played. But yeah. It is. I mean, it's a big dumb superhero fight, but it's not dumb in the sense that you're right. There's actually plots move ahead, some interesting character stuff happens. There's real stakes in this crossover, and it's. I don't know production behind the scenes, but I feel like the budgets for all the shows were added together, because you're right, the fight scene does feel like there's a lot more money thrown into it, and it just looks and feels really, really cool. Yep. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. And the other thing that was interesting is that because this is not the first time these folks have crossed over, I mean, these characters not only have relationships with each other, even the fight scene, there's a very natural fighting chemistry between a lot of these characters. And we see more of that as we move on, but it's not like they're tripping over each other. They all just kind of just leap right into action. So yeah, it all just, it's a very satisfying scene. And this is a bit of a digression. I want to talk a little bit about Nazis in comics, because there's a long history of Nazis being the villains in comics. And there was a point where Nazis are kind of almost a cliche villains in comics. It's the, it's the easy, almost jokey a villain, because you know it's been so overdone. I feel like for a lot of reasons we've wrapped around on that, and this is a really good moment. But the nice thing about Earth X about this is that so many of all of these shows sometimes have very complicated, nuanced relationship between the villains and the heroes. And like, you know, yes, Thrawn killed my mother, but he went back in time. And if he didn't go back in time, maybe, you know, all the blah 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 blah. Or I need to kill the Dark Archer, but he's secretly my buddy's father and whatnot. Having just some villains that you go, nope, those are Nazis, we're no more discussion, we need to stop those guys, and that just being the thread throughout. Yeah, at no point in time do we go, maybe we should talk to the Nazis, or maybe we should, you know, work with them. No, those are the bad guys, we need to stop them. And from second one, there's something that's a little actually satisfying about that, because then the space that frees up to focus on the characters we care about sets an interesting tone. It's again like this fight scene, it's like Nazis showed up, okay, we attack them. There's no commiseration or debate on the point. And so we can free that up for just more cool fight choreography. So anything else about Oh, go ahead. We talked about this. He went back in time. Okay, now I will say, of any character who would absolutely pack a giant flame gun to a funeral and sit with it uncomfortably just to make sure he had it, it would be Rory. So I think he totally had that gun the whole time. Absolutely sat down next to the police chief with a fire gun because he could. Oh, that's right. Right. Because again, the reason why we did this is because we want to have a cool fight in a wedding. And we don't really want to deal with the consequences of that, so blah blah blah, flashy thing, move on. And the show again, the show's just like very confident about it. This is not the debate we're gonna have. There's other debates we're gonna have. This ain't the one we're having, so we're just gonna move on from this. There are no consequences from this fight. Okay. It helps that the show has other consequences on the table and puts those on the table pretty fast. This is not where those consequences hit. So we can have a nice fun fight here because consequences start to build up over the next few parts. So yeah, overall, this is a very I mean, yeah, we talk about the next steps and we realize, oh, okay, they're actually secretly evil people, although Evil Flash is actually Thrawn and not Barry. Yeah, basically this is all set up. And it's fun, unapologetic setup. Right. Because fuck that guy. Okay, Arrow, Season 6, Episode 8, Part 2. In Star Labs, Prometheus reveals himself as Tommy Merlin's evil ex-doppelganger and taunts Oliver for taking a suicide pill out of loyalty to the Fuhrer, who is also Ollie. Harry reveals that through his exploration of the multiverse, he discovered that Earth-X's dystopian world where World War II is not won by Allied forces. Dark Arrow, Overgirl, and Thawne steal an experimental sublight generator, the Prism, from a research company. Oliver's team, along with Harry, Killer Frost, Sisko, and Mickey Rory, are held captive at Star Labs after the Nazi forces occupy it. Oliver, Barry, Sarah, Martin, Jefferson, and Alex are taken to a concentration camp on Earth-X, where Kara is moved to Star Labs. Overgirl is dying from a disproportionate solar irradiation in her heart, because sure, why not? And Doc Arrow's plan is to use the prism powered by Star Labs' particle accelerator to create an artificial red sunlight that can weaken both Kara's invulnerability, allowing Thawne to transplant Kara's heart to Overgirl. This is so much proper noun bullshit. I love it. Okay, so we start off. Prometheus is like, oh, it's a great chance for Tommy Merlin to come back because Tommy Merlin has been dead for 5 seasons now, and so it's like, oh, cool, it's Tommy Merlin again, always evil. And there was a great little moment of like, I carried you, I love about your brother, but you're weak. And then he has a poison pill in his tooth because it's 1940, and he chews on it and dies. And Oliver doesn't know how to do the fast open on the supercell, which, they had these supercells in Star Labs for years now, and they've figured out a quick open button because they always get stuck on it. They always get stuck in them. Right. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And we skipped over a lot of seasons of Flash, but there's a one season at least where there's a character stuck into a cell for several episodes. So it's not even the, oh, they get put away and then taken off to an actual proper job. No. They're just keeping a guy in their basement for long periods of time. No toilet. The only thing that would be even more cliche if it was for some inexplicable reason a giant glass cube like all supercells are in most media. Right, because there's no metal. Oh my God. Okay, quick question. Favorite supercell in media? I think mine is the one they put Loki in the Avengers movie because it's the if you decide to take over our mind, we're just gonna drop you from like a million miles in the air. But it's that's why I love it. That's why I love it because like it is, it's like what is the worst possible way we can imprison someone, short of like just not bothering. He really is. He's so bad. Okay, so Harry reveals that he's explored the multiverse, and this is of the 52 Earths. I'm going to pause there. DC at this point in time was obsessed with the fact that there are only 52 Earths in the multiverse, except for all of the times when there are more than 52 of them. But this one is so evil. It's a secret 53rd Earth that no one talks about, and they call it Earth X because it's so evil. It's not like Earth 10. No, no, it's evil. The Earth of Harry, apparently. I think this is the Harry Wells that came back after the season one Harrison Wells, who actually came from when Barry started going through the multiverse and brought this guy back. He was trapped in a couple different multiverses. I think this is, because this is the Harry Wells that's not as smart as the original Harrison Wells, and also is slightly more of a jerk than the original Harrison Wells somehow. No. This is a different Harry. Yeah. But yes, there are a lot of Wellses. So Dark Arrow, Overgirl, and Thought. Now, to be fair, Dark Arrow and Overgirl never actually said those names, but if you watch the subtitles, those are the titles they're given, so it's even better. But they steal the prism from a research company, and again, it's just the, we need this thing called the prism. It's over there. Okay, we got it now. It's basically what it comes down to. And I'm for that. It's just like, okay, we don't care about this part of the episode. The bad guys need a thing, and now they have a thing. Great. Let's go. No. The best part about that scene is Barry and Kara show up. They look at each other. We cut to the microphone, the motorcycle. We look back to see Barry looking at his wrist where there's no watch. So Barry is trolling Oliver, and I am here for it. But the thing is that, again, this is kind of a unlike the wedding fight, this is kind of a very short perfunctory fight. Because we want to show that, like, the heroes aren't going to always win. And say, okay, so actually a good chunk of them get captured. And they're held in Star Labs in the secret vaults that they have made and do not have their own way of getting out of. And the best part of this is, like, okay, so Harry Wells has some kind of vaguely defined ability to travel the multiverse. So he has superpowers, but it's kind of vague. Killer Frost, it was kind of vaguely implied that he may also have an ability to do it inherently, but it was vague. So I could see why, just out of caution, you put him in a cell. Great. Killer Frost, when she gets mad or scared, and she's now both of those things, she becomes a nice character. Yes, put her in a vault. Cisco is vibe and can, you know, travel different locations. So yeah, put him in the power deputy cell. Rory has a gun. A flamethrower that we have previously established he can pull from everywhere. Is it a secret power that he can pull his gun from anywhere? But do you dampen his ability to pull a secret flamethrower from anywhere? Is that what's happening? Why is he in the cell? It's also implied that he's drunk at this point, too. Yes, it implies he's drunk or hungover. So, like, he's just kind of in a cell, passed out for most of the scene. And it's just... and then, so, Oliver, Barry, Sarah, Martin, Jefferson, and Alex should take it to a concentration camp on Earth-X. Now, Earth-X, it is 2019 on Earth-X. It's been 70 years since the Nazis have taken over the world, and apparently they have not figured out how to update A, concentration camp technology, and B, the uniforms that people wear in concentration camps. They're still the black and white stripes you see in, like, Looney Tunes cartoons. Because it's the 1940s. Yes. As the, that's actually part three. We'll get to that. That's fine. I just look at my notes and say, oh wait, no, we ain't gotten to me yet. That's fine. No, we'll leave it in. It's okay. And then of course we have the, red sunlight, because that weakens the power so we can actually do the surgery. Yep. Well, next, I take it back. No, a Kryptonian can build that because that was where we left the Superman and Lois. Was that Superman was under the red sunlight. Right. But Luthor cannot. You're correct. Thawne is officially smarter than Lex Luthor. You know what? That's plausible. Maybe in Earth X they killed the Kryptonians and stole that. Yeah, so and I actually kind of like the fact that like Thawne's like, so we could just take over this whole planet, right? And like, you know, there's like other things you could be doing here. And Eva Ollie's like, no, but heart. And it's like, well, okay, yes, but we have an entire army. We could just get a lot more than a heart, right? Like, there's so much stuff we could do here. And Eva Ollie's like, no, heart. And even like evil Kara's like, okay, yes, I'm dying and that kind of sucks, but maybe we should do more than just get me a heart. And like, no, heart. Why do we put this guy in charge? But it's like dissension in the ranks, but it's just so over the top and ridiculous, and it's wonderful. Right. And the Kryptonite arrow. Yes. And I love the fact that Kara asked the correct question of why do you have a Kryptonite arrow? And Ollie's correct answer is in case there was an evil you, obviously. Because Oliver Queen lives in the DC universe and knows how this works. But you bring up a good point, like, because in Batwoman, they said this is the last piece of kryptonite, except for the other piece that I kept. And it's like, but Oliver apparently has an entire set of arrows with kryptonite. How rare is it? It's Earth 12 kryptonite. I don't know. They took one of the Earths and just mined it for kryptonite. Okay, anything else about episode two? Or do you want to get right to the Harry Dresden? Okay. The Flash, season four, episode eight, part three. In the concentration camp, the heroes are rescued from execution at the hands of SS Sturmbannfuhrer Quentin Lance by Ray Terrell and Leo Snart, Leonard Snart Doppelganger. Thawne prepares to operate on both Overgirl and Kara, and Iris and Felicity work to rescue their friend to Star Labs. General Wynn Schott, the commander of the Freedom Fighters, is determined to strand Dark Arrow and Overgirl on Earth 1 by destroying the temporal gateway. While posing as Dark Arrow, Oliver discovers that the Nazis possess a doomsday device in the form of a time ship called the Wellenrider, a militarized equivalent of the Wave Rider. That's not even the correct German. Oliver allows a time ship to enter Earth 1 to avoid jeopardizing his cover, but is ultimately exposed when he refuses to kill Felicity's Earth X doppelganger, a concentration camp prisoner. The heroes struggle against both the Freedom Fighters' Red Tornado, deployed by Schott as a failsafe, and the Nazi forces, and Martin opens the gateway at the cost of being mortally wounded. Oh man, there's so much to unpack here. So, yes, we start with Quentin Lance is inexplicably German, and like all good Germans in media, has an English accent. Right. It's so goddamn random, and it's just like it really came down to I feel like they've written the scripts and they started shooting. It's like, fuck, where do we put Paul Blackthorne? Wait, don't we have a Nazi part we need to fill? And Paul's like, sure, whatever, I'll do it. And it's great. It's great. He's so evil. He did. He did. It's so awesome. It's like, why is I had a daughter like you once, and I got rid of her. I purified my bloodline. It's just like, go, you go for it, Paul. You just chew that scenery, man. Yes, right. It's like, I'm gonna draw you in. I'm gonna draw you in. No, I'm evil. And it's great. Right. And because it's the well, these are doppelgangers people would care about. So I was like, I want to care about them. So I'm going to draw you in briefly and then just show you how evil I am. So, nope, back to hating Nazis. Okay, cool. It's like, there's a half second where maybe you're flickering. As soon as you get that moment where you're having doubt, we're going to crush that. And then, no, they're absolutely evil. Make no mistake. So it's just relentlessly like, no, you do not like these guys. We make sure you're super clear at every single point. We don't like Nazis. Right. Yeah, exactly. It's like, hey, we finally figured out how bad guys work. So I want to talk about Ray and Leo. There's a lot I want to talk about here. First of all, I spent this entire episode going, who is Ray supposed to be? What superhero is Ray? What is Ray? And it's like literally the Ray. And I'm like, of course. I didn't even know that existed until you just mentioned it. We did miss the very brief Vixen animated show, which also is part of the Arrowverse. That's probably right. So I don't have enough emotional investment to know how accurate the Ray is, but the fact that he shoots beams of light and is bright seems to be accurate what little I know of the character, so sure. We'll say it's 100% comic accurate. Yep. It's great. And then Leo. One, always glad to see Snart come back, right? Two, him being gay is amazing for a lot of reasons. Not least of which is that now 100% support for the Snart Rory fanfic. It's definitely happened. But also to make him an uptight rules following hero, but with the exact same voice and inflection is just, oh, so good. He's a snide, irritating asshole who's also lawful good now. It's just amazing. Yes, because this actor, he plays just one character, but he plays it so well. Leo Snart does not change. And I love the fact that in this multiverse of 52 plus one Shadow Earth, that Leo Snart changes not one bit. He will do completely different things. He will be on completely different sides, but Leo Snart is indelible. He is the same across the entire multiverse. And there's a nice little bit about the, you know, why are you here? Because I love the wrong person thing. And it's like, it's kind of reminding, oh yeah, by the way, Nazis just really hated everyone. Just complete shitbags. Then we have the, Thawne tries to operate. There's some evil cackling. There's a bit about, Thawne trying to tell Overgirl, what if the fear her loses sight of his goals, and it's like, well, then I will die if I have to make sure he understands the Reich and blah 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 blah. Yeah, so gigantic. Ah, there we go. See, that's how you do it. There we go. Yeah, particularly Iris, because Iris very much has a tendency to be kind of just the girlfriend, or in this case now the wife. So getting her to actually do something is kind of nice. And then we see evil Windshot is actually good Windshot. And it took me like a minute to go, wait a minute, who's Windshot? Oh, right, he's the guy who wants to bang Kara in Supergirl. Okay, got it. Right, I know. Yeah. Wow, okay. I didn't realize I had missed a Legion of Superheroes reference. I may have to go back and watch those episodes. All right. Which is? Oh, well then, never mind. I don't want to watch them anymore. Windshot, I kind of like this because it reminded me a bit of the Mirror Universe episodes of Deep Space Nine that I liked, which is that even the quote-unquote good people are also kind of evil too. Because he's like, yeah, I'm going to destroy the Temple Gateway and just strand those people on your Earth, because screw your Earth. You know, our Earth will be safe, but your Earth, it'll be gone. It's like, wow, even the heroes are kind of jerks, except for Leo Snart. Leo Snart is amazing. Yeah, absolutely. No, it's actually sympathetic, but he does, the actor, again, presents it in that over-the-top way, so it's like, okay, I hear you, but also you're still kind of an asshole. So it is, I think, a good pitch. Right. Yeah. This isn't a future. This is a parallel universe. So this will go on regardless of what you do. And then we have Ollie pretending. Again, with these kind of episodes, you, at some point you have to have one person replace the other. So Ollie comes in to Nazi up the place and gets outsmarted by Paul, by Harry Dresden, by Paul Blackstone, Blackthorne, whatever. And to reveal, go ahead. I was gonna say is to reveal that there is a Nazi version of the Wave Rider on this Earth. And I'm like, on the one hand, that is the most ridiculous episode. Like there's an evil version of every person, and there's an evil version of this time ship, which implies an evil version of the Time Masters. And it's just the amazing over the top reveal. But also, why didn't they use that to go back in time to stop Earth X from being overrun by Nazis? Why don't they just take the Welland Rider and go back in time and have them lose the war? But I love the fact that it is literally the exact same ship with the Nazi symbols painted on the side of it. It's just not even hiding it. He's so used to using arrows. But I do completely believe the fact that Oliver Queen went in with like 14% of a plan. He's like, I'm going to sneak in, I'll pretend to be the Fuhrer, and I'll get inside. He's like, yeah, then what? Don't know. And I just kind of like the fact that, like, I actually like the fact that the evil doppelgangers whose plan was to invade on the Earth thought, you know, there's a chance that someone might try to infiltrate us? Maybe we should be prepared for that. I actually liked that. Because I was waiting for, because going, and finally I was just like, no, they knew the whole time they knew. They all knew the whole time. Now, this is a place where I think I had stopped watching a couple seasons ago, so I don't think this ever came up. I did not know that Felicity was Jewish. I don't know if this was established before or if it was established in this episode. Because established in this episode, it felt heavy-handed. But I'm willing to accept that it may have been established before and I just missed it. Okay. I'm willing to give them a benefit of doubt, because it was, like you said before, it could have been played subtly. That is not what we're here to do, and it would have been the wrong call to play this subtly. It's like, she's a Jew. You need to shoot her. I can't do it. You're not who I thought you were. I mean, it needs to be that blunt, that over the head, because like these are Nazis, they're bad. You're never, ever, we're never going to let you forget that. Right. Right. And so to counteract the Welland Rider, the Freedom Fighters send their secret weapon, which is Red Motherfucking Tornado. And I was like, I cheered. I'm not going to lie. I was like, oh my God, it's Red Tornado. Red Tornado is a robot that makes tornadoes. And he's amazing. He is basically, if you took Data from Next Generation and gave him wind powers, you'd basically Red Tornado. Because he doesn't understand humanity and wants to become more human and wants to understand emotions, but doesn't. So he does things like adopts children and pets puppies. And so the fact that these freedom fighters are like, we're just going to reprogram this robot and shoot him at the Nazis and blow up a temporal gateway with a giant wind-bearing robot. And it's like, that is a perfect logical thing to do in a Nazi-controlled DC universe. That makes perfect sense. The Flash, I agree with. The Ray, I will say, the Red Tornado at one point led the Justice League. It was for about 10 minutes, but he did lead the Justice League. The Ray never led the Justice League. Right. I don't know. Then we get to the there's of course a big switch because all very complicated devices can be shut down very simply by throwing one single switch. That is exactly how it always works. And everyone's pinned down, and so Martin runs across and gets straight up shot. And then that's the end of the episode. Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. I also like the fact that, yes, technically he is part of Firestorm, and therefore, technically speaking, one of the superheroes. But it shows that the generally human cast are in danger. And also, this is the perfect time to actually introduce, and we've been introducing stakes. We have not yet seen cost. And we now actually see the cost that the heroes have to pay to stop this invasion. Now, I will say, having not seen this crossover, when I got to this point, I was like, and of course, it's going to be fine at the end of the episode. Brief spoiler for what we're going to talk about next. He's not. And it was a good choice. But before we get into that, is there anything else about this episode you want to talk about? Well, in writer. All right. Legends of Heroes, Season 3, Episode 8, Part 4. The heroes return to Earth-1, and Iris, Felicity, Kara, and the others are rescued by the returned heroes and the Wave Rider crew. Jefferson is also affected by Martin's injuries, so Martin uses a serum to separate the Firestorm Matrix, dying from his wounds. Jefferson tells Martin's family of his fate. They, along with the Legends and Barry's team, are devastated by Martin's death. His death spurs the heroes to declare war on Earth-X Nazi forces because there's no reason to kill Nazis before. When Nazis attack Central City, the heroes counter their assaults. Harry, at the helm of the Wave Rider, destroys the Wellenreiter after the heroes disable its shield. Barry spares I like the Christians every time I say Wellenreiter. Barry spares Thawne and allows him to escape. Thawne vows to return. During battle with Kara, Overgirl's solar radiation goes nuclear and carries her into space where her body explodes. Overgirl, not Kara's body. Oliver kills a grief-stricken Dark Arrow soon afterwards. I'm going to reiterate that. Oliver straight up kills Dark Arrow. After Martin's funeral, Kara and Alex return to Earth-38. Ray returns to Earth-X, and Leo decides to temporarily stay with the Legends. John Diggle shows up randomly because he's an ordained minister and officiates Barry and Oliver's weddings with Iris and Felicity, respectively. We'll get to Diggle. But we have to start at the beginning. I liked the fact that half Firestorm gets shot. The first thing I think of is form Firestorm. Because that was the first thing I thought of. Like, why don't they form Firestorm? And they go, form Firestorm. Oh, okay, good. Thank you. You're thinking. Because maybe if we combine them, he will stay alive longer. And that is what actually happens. But then they're like, oh, because of their matrix, now Jefferson's injured. And so now they're both in critical shape. I'm like, okay, that is a logical way to explain that. And I love when superhero media, they think like fans. It's like, why wouldn't a superhero do this? And then they do it and then explain why that won't work. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Speaking of that, a moment that we missed in the third episode, but I also loved, is when they're planning to infiltrate the Nazi base, and Ollie goes, we should do recon, and Barry goes, okay. Then a second later comes back, and here's the entire base. And like that is such a flash moment where he just disappears for 1 second and knows it all. We don't need to see him doing it. Just have him zip off screen and zip right back. But again, they thought about that. It's like, why wouldn't Barry just super speed through all that? The answer is he does. But they call back to episode one where Stein was like, we can separate this matrix so I can have a life. And now it's being used so that Martin can save Jefferson. And they spend time on this scene. And I'm glad they do, because my respect for the guy who plays Jefferson as an actor went up a million notches in this scene. I was crying at the end of it because that actor fucking nails it. I genuinely and sincerely believed in the agony he was going through. Like the actual lines are every cliche line that happens in these kinds of scenes, right? It's Wrath of Khan. It's Optimus Prime dying in Transformers. Like there are certain lines you just say at these moments, And they took those lines and they both really invested everything into those moments. And the director took the right moment to give them the space and the time to really dig into those. And so they're pausing and they're awkward and Jefferson's stumbling over himself, but you hear the line clearly and he looks devastated. And when he tells the family afterwards, he doesn't say a word, but his body and his face acting tell you absolutely everything going through his mind. And to skip ahead to the funeral also, but like, again, when he's giving the eulogy and just can't do it, and he apologizes to Stein's family, and like, again, the lines are pretty typical of these scenes, but the actor just gives an energy and a heartbreaking depth to them that I was like, it was almost uncomfortable to watch because it looked like someone who's genuinely in agony and emotional pain for having lost someone. And for all of the past three episodes have been really fun superhero stuff, I was just like, this is some fantastic acting. And I was really glad they had an opportunity for this. And if anything, it made me more frustrated for, like, where was this kind of acting in season one of Legends of Tomorrow? But they any time to ease into that stuff. And frankly, these two characters haven't had as much screen time at that point. Now they've felt it. And I was like, I now regret this. Like, you know, I want to see more of these guys together. So I'm getting tired of them now. It's like, no, I don't want them to go. You know, so it's good. It's good that they did it. Yes. I was less enamored with literally every single support character also feeling that way. Because like they all kind of knew Stein, but like 60% of them had maybe met him twice, right? And so like Sarah Lance going, I'm going to murder a bunch of Nazis now later, was, I completely believe that. Iris going, I really miss him. It's like, do you though? Do you really know the guy that much? Yes. No, I completely buy Sarah. I mean, if for no other reason than it's a member of my team and how she feels about her team, that I believe that. But yeah, you're right. I know that they had built up a personal relationship as well. So I'm like, the Legends team, I was completely behind. All that. And even the leads like Ollie and Flash, because there's been enough crossover, I could say that. It was the non-Legend support cast who felt like they were devastated by it. And it was just like, it seemed a bit too much to me. Yeah. Right. Right. And I kind of liked that Rory was just like, cool, let's murder Nazis. You know, he didn't have an emotional outburst. His emotional outburst was violence. Like, that is correct for Rory. Is it? his embiggening? Yeah. Oh, right. Right. When Overgirl gets... No, it's Kara gets operated on. There's a nice moment where the scalpel goes down and it's like, I can't get in. And so you think maybe Kara's not hit by red radiation, but it turned out it's actually the Atom who's holding up the scalpel and pushes it back. And I was like, oh, that's right. The Atom's also on this team. But, you know, it's like, anyway, Ryder came back. And again, there's so many characters. Of course, you're going to have to take a chunk of them off screen for several episodes, right? So I was like, I wasn't mad about it. It's like, you bring them back. It's the last episode. You get absolutely everyone together for the big fight. That makes sense. And I did, you're right, I did like the moment of his big hand just slapping the Nazi down. But him saying, it embiggens. And I'm like, really? Okay. I do believe Howard Ray Palmer absolutely reads Marvel Comics. So there's Vixen. There's Vixen, there's Steel, and then there's the other one, and that one guy. Because I have not watched as far into Legends of Tomorrow. I don't know. I was just like, I don't know who half these people are. I know Ray is. So I'm glad they focused on the people that I knew, because otherwise I was like, okay, I know Steel because I saw that episode, and I know Vixen because I watched the animated series, and there's one girl who apparently didn't have an outfit until this episode, so that was her character arc, where she got an outfit, and some other guy that was blandly handsome. I don't know. I don't know who these people are. There are too many characters. But again, for the last 20 minutes of the final episode, that's fine. Right. Which, I swear to God, if they had one more legend reference in there, I was going to throw something. We're not heroes, but we could be legends. And like, I swear to God, like the team name has an ellipsis in front of it. Because every time they say the word legend, they have to pause. It's like, what team are you? We're the legends. You could just say legends. You don't have to, you have to pause. But it's okay. So, Barry is peak Barry Allen. It's like, the man who murdered my mother that I have killed several times. I'm going to let the Nazi version of him go. Cause that will not come back and cause consequences for me in any way, shape or form. It's like, yeah, it's Barry Allen. And this is not even like a theoretical thing. He literally tried several times to murder one of your friends during this miniseries. This is not a potentiality. This is will happen. Right. During this, Harry Wells is the helm of the Wellbrider, and then stuff happens. There's evolving ships, shields, and the shields are taken down, and then they destroy the Wellenrider. And it was fine. It was a nice space combat scene that allowed the support cast to do a cool thing. I was perfectly happy with it. So Overgirl, this is one that, because they've been so consistent with their writing and the rules of the world, this is one that actually bugged me. At no point did they say that they said Overgirl had too much solar radiation and it would kill her. They never mentioned exploding. Any point in time, I'm at that point in time, it's like, you know, she's gonna explode and we'll take her up in space. And the whole time, I'm like, I'm trying to get invested in the scene, but also, I'm like, how does a heart transplant stop someone from exploding? I feel like there's a bit here that I'm missing. I don't know Kryptonian mythology. I mean, maybe the answer should have been they should have replaced her brain with a Kryptonian implant, maybe that would have worked better. How did we forget Metallo? Oh my God, yes. In the middle of all of this, by the way, Metallo. And I'm like, holy shit, it's Metallo. Why? Because. I mean, the one thing that would have met her would have been Nazi Sportsmaster, honestly. anyway, so Overgirl explodes. Kara falls back to Earth and does the Superman thing, which I think happens once every major Superman event where Superman or Supergirl or some Kryptonian falls to Earth and lands in a hole in the ground. It's fine. It's a trope. Dark Arrow realizes his wife is dead, falls to his knees, and goes, I have no more reason to live. And Oliver goes, okay, and murders him. And No. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, of all the characters on these shows, Oliver Queen is the only person who could have done that. Because Oliver Queen, yes, there was a whole season where he's like, I won't kill anymore. And he sucked at that. He by his own admission, was like, I'm bad at this. I'm just going to go back to murdering people occasionally. And Felicity's like, it's okay. Sometimes you have to murder people. It's cool, honey. And that's what you need. When a wife is someone who stands by you when you have to occasionally murder Nazis. Right. Exactly. And again, like, you know, to make sure that Oliver's not undeniable, you're right. Dark Arrow does try to attack him, so Oliver is technically acting self-defense, but he straight up murders his doppelganger. And, well, he should. And then, yeah, the funeral we talked about a little bit. It's heartbreaking. It's heart-wrenching. It's exactly what needs to happen there to really sell. Yeah, this character's gone, but it's comic books, so, you know, what happens. Ray decides he's going to go back to Earth-X to fight Nazis. Leo decides he's going to stay behind with the Legends because the Legends needs a snart. And again, another moment where I was like, I kind of want to see where Legends goes after this, because I want to see how Rory handles Lawful Good Snart. That seems like that would just be an amazing choice. And totally have an affair, because he's not going back to Ray, sorry. The only thing I'm disappointed about is, like, that is the... Okay, so we mentioned it at the top, we didn't talk about this. So throughout all this, Kara's sister and Sarah, they had a one-night stand. It gets awkward. Kara's sister's like, I broke up with this girl I don't know where I'm like. And Sarah's just like, cool, I was just happy to have a fun night. And Sarah, and they actually talk about it and talk it through, and they end in a good place. Sarah's not completely dismissive of her feelings. It's just that Sarah and Kara's sister, I keep forgetting her name, Sarah and Alex are in different places in their emotional arcs. It was a really cool moment to have these two characters have a really interesting, meaningful conversation that weren't straight people. So like all these people have relationships. And then on top of it, there's this little thing about Ray and Leo, who sadly do not have nearly the same chemistry that Sarah and Alex had, but they try. And so it's like having two different queer relationships on the show, neither of which involve them having a fight or one of them dying. It's just, they're just people trying to figure things out. Leo suddenly decided, hey, I'm going to go hang out with my doppelganger's best friends because reasons was a bit abrupt. But, you know, again, I'm not going to be mad about seeing more Snart on TV. Yeah. Yes, and them being so awkward. Oh, God, it was just like, okay, I guess we're hugging now. It was, so great. Yes. Right. No, it showed all of their emotional relationships in a very clear way. And then John Dickel. Of course, Barry and Iris have the very sensible thing of, listen, superhero weddings are, supervillains always attack, so we're just gonna get married now, away from everybody else, which is always the right answer. Of course, Felicity and Oliver decide they're actually going to get married now. Felicity changes her mind and decides she's going to get married now. And she has a proper emotional arc for this. It's not out of nowhere. They've been building to this. They've been establishing this. So it's a satisfying conclusion to that arc. My frustrations are twofold. A, it really, really reinforced that John Dickel was completely underutilized for this entire crossover. The fact that he's literally crammed in at the end for a vomit gag, and because he's conveniently an ordained minister. But more offensively, speaking as someone who is also an ordained minister, that's not how ordination works. It's by state. You can't just be ordained to officiate anywhere. You have to be ordained by the state you're in. So he cannot marry them in Central City. He cannot legally do that. It is in a different state. It's been established repeatedly in The Flash that he is several states away from where Oliver's at, because that's a running joke. So unless Dickel is ordained in several states, John Dickel illegally performed the wedding ceremony. That is what I'm taking away from this entire crossover. This is the hill I'm dying on, Chris. No, it's a bit of a meh ending, because it's like it starts the wedding, it ends the wedding. I know it makes perfect sense, but the fact that it's John Dickel doing it just really reinforced that this is another amazing. This so overstuffed. They couldn't get everybody in. I get it. I know all the reasons why, but like you, I'm a huge fan of Dickel, and I always want to see more of him. So it's. You're never going to get absolutely everyone in here doing absolutely everything you wanted to do. So it's just kind of frustrating to see that this is the part where they shove him in. It's like, if they had, like, you know, a moment of him fighting the Nazis, I would have been fine. You know, just one scene of him. Yeah. taking a gun or some arrows and just shooting some Nazis, great. That would have been enough for me. It didn't have to be much. But the fact this is the only place they got him in, and for all I know, maybe it's the only time the actor had to do it, you know? I don't know. It certainly feels like it was a day shoot, you know? Like, let's just get him on there because it's the only day we have for him to do this. But to be fair, that is the biggest complaint I have. And from the past few shows, that feels like an amazing accomplishment because we've struggled through a few of those shows. I'm moving on to final thoughts, but I'm glad we ended with this because while the Arrowverse definitely went out with a whimper, and certainly near the end there were some very rough choices, this is a very good window into what made this special. This was a unique moment in superhero television. It was something that was probably never could see its like entirely again. Although I think, like you said, the MCU has the opportunity to do something close to this. But this is 700 plus episodes of superhero TV, and the people who made it love comic books, and they love a very specific style of comic books, and they were not afraid of it, and they did what they could with what they had, and all of the actors and the production team seemed to be on the same page, and you could see that they brought a level of enthusiasm and joy to television that we just don't frankly see much. How about you? Now that we're at the end. Okay. It was good. Excellent. Well, now that we're done, we have nothing more to talk about. No, there are no more superheroes to talk about, Rich. Chris, we've got them all, right? What time is it now? Oh my God. McRory. No, I just wanted to see what your reaction was, honestly. So I took notes. Jessica Jones was the first I picked last time. So of all of the Arrowverse, honestly, I probably would pick Supergirl. For a couple of reasons. One is obviously she's a powerhouse. She's got a great skill set, but also I think just on a writer level, having Jessica Jones and Kara Danvers on the same team would be amazing to listen to because they would hate each other. And it would be glorious. How about you? Good. Right. Because last time you picked Iron Fist, right? Now is that who you picked? I think she's Luke. Felicity Smoke? Crap. Yeah, I forgot. Yeah, see, I did not realize. Yes, technically speaking, John Constantine. We didn't cover any episodes with him in it, but you're right. He's part of the Arrowverse. Right. 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 Yeah. Yeah, that doesn't remind me. I'm going to need either a scientist or a magician on my next pick to round my out because I have a lot of intelligence in terms of investigation, but not in terms of actual like weird shit. So, I mean, Kryptonian stuff, but yeah. Yeah, but I actually went back and double checked my pick because I was like, I know this is coming soon. I knew it was, I was waiting for it. I'm like, this is going to happen. He says anything. Maybe he'll forget, but I better double check what my choice was. Cool. All right. What's the next thing? okay. Some of those are true. Yeah. It's fine. So if people wanted to talk to you about your controversial picks for superhero teams, where would they find you online? Yes. You can find me on dice.camp, actually most places as Pugstady. It's PUGSTADY. Pugstady.com is my website. You can also find me on the Darker Hue Discord, defending the Serpent Society, as most right-thinking people should. come, please. If you like this, like we're doing, if you like this nonsense, please let us know. Please, if you'd like to financially support us, go back the Darker Hue Patreon, where you will get bonus episodes of us talking about whatever Chris has decided we're going to talk about this month. Usually movies, but who knows? Recently, we talked about Gross Point Blank, and that was actually a lot of fun. That was a movie that aged a lot better than I thought it would. So come check us out, enjoy our stuff. But otherwise, next week we will be going to Jupiter's Legacy. Talk to you later.